After the movie Free Willy became a hit, word got out that the star of the film, a killer whale named Keiko, was sick and still living in a tiny pool in a Mexican amusement park. Fans were outraged. Kids demanded his release. I'm Daniel Alarcón. From Serial Productions and the New York Times comes The Good Whale, a story about the wildly ambitious science experiment to return Keiko to the ocean. Listen to new episodes on Thursdays. Want early access to the whole show? Subscribe to The Times at nytimes.com/podcasts to listen on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, one by one, executives from some of the country's biggest and most powerful companies were dropping from the president's advisory councils. Then came the press conference. How the nation's top CEOs quickly and decisively voted to cut ties with the CEO president. It's Thursday, August 17th.
I think I knew, even over the weekend, from a number of people on that council that they were upset. I mean, so many of them were outraged, and I had had sort of some back and forth with them. I didn't think they were going to do anything about it. And in fact, I was, to some degree, sort of surprised.
Over the past few days, Andrew Ross Sorkin has been tracking members of the president's business council as they grew increasingly upset with his response to the violence in Charlottesville. Why did you think that? Why did you think they weren't going to do anything?
Because they openly, or not so openly, but at least privately, talk about the fear that Donald Trump is going to go after them on Twitter. And even more than Twitter. I mean, you know, I think that a lot of them either have direct business with the government, or he's going to say something to the consumers, or this has just become so political for them, and a lot of them want to keep their head down.
Making headlines right now, Merck CEO Ken Frazier announcing he is resigning from President Trump's American Manufacturing Council in a statement posted on Twitter.
Ken Frazier of Merck resigns from the Manufacturing Council Monday morning.
Merck, and as a matter of personal conscience, I feel a responsibility to take a stand against intolerance and extremism.
And then Donald Trump goes after him.
Right.
The president has tweeted, now that Ken Frazier of Merck Pharma has resigned from President's Manufacturing Council, he will have more time to, in all caps, lower rip-off drug prices, exclamation point.
And literally that morning, I ran to the office and started writing a column about when are these CEOs going to start doing something about it.
And you posed the question, like,
at what point is enough enough? Because privately, they would say, Andrew, this is ridiculous. This is craziness.
So what's
going on
here? They were upset about the way he was handling Charlottesville.
By the way, they had been upset about Charlottesville. They were upset about the Paris Accord. They were upset about the immigration. This has been bubbling under the surface for so long. And yet, I was frustrated because privately, off the record, they would say to you, I can't believe what's happening here. This is crazy. On the record, either no comment or, you know, we like working with the White House or whatever, you know, the language was going to be.
Right.
And so I literally sent out emails to virtually all of them, not all of them, but a lot of them Monday morning. Urgent, Trump, what are you going to do? And either a lot of them didn't get back to me or a couple of them did and would only talk completely off the record. And one of them I quoted, not by name, saying, look at what they just did to Ken. I can't put my head up. I knew that they were all talking to each other and that there was a lot of back-channeling with each other, but I had no thought they would actually do anything about it, in part because Trump, of course, Monday afternoon puts out his statement.
Racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans.
So I did not think that this was going to end with the rapidity that it did. We started to feel it a little bit more Monday night as you started to see people like Kevin Plank from Under Armour, who was on the Manufacturing Council, go off.
The CEO of Under Armour putting out this statement saying, I am appreciative of the opportunity to have served, but have decided to step down from the council. I love our country and our company.
He had gotten a real earful earlier in the year from Steph Curry. Steph Curry is not only a basketball player, as you know, but Steph Curry is an Under Armour athlete. And he was very upset with Kevin about some comments that he made that sounded supportive of the president.
Under Armour CEO Kevin Plank recently called President Trump an asset to the United States. Well, via the Mercury News, Steph Curry said, quote, "I agree with that description if you remove the et from asset," unquote. My goodness. Well, Steph Curry is a close friend of President Obama and one of Under Armour's most high profile athletes.
So there was that. And then you had Brian Kazanich from Intel.
Also the CEO of Intel putting out this statement saying, "I resigned because I want to make progress. While many in Washington seem more concerned with attacking anyone who disagrees with them, we should honor, not attack, those who have stood for equality and other cherished American values. I hope this will change."
But the main council, the big deal, was always the Schwarzman Council.
Remind me who Steve Schwarzman is and why he matters.
So Steve Schwarzman matters because he runs Blackstone, which is the largest private equity company in the world. It's one of the largest employers in the world. He was the person who President Trump tasked early on with creating a committee, creating these relationships with all these CEOs.
Thank you all for being here. Very much appreciated. I want to thank Steve Schwarzman for putting together this very incredible group of world-class business leaders. That's what you are.
And he put them all together. And so,
to advise the president.
To advise the president.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mark Field, CEO of Ford Motor Company.
It really is the top CEOs of American business.
Thank you, Mr. President. Alex Gorsky with Johnson & Johnson.
Doug McMillon, the CEO of Walmart. Ginni Rometty, the CEO of IBM. Indra Nooyi, the CEO of PepsiCo. Jack Welch, the former CEO of General Electric. Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan. Jim McNerney, the CEO of Boeing. Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock. Mary Barra, the CEO of General Motors.
Thank you, Mr. President. Denise Morrison from Campbell Soup Company.
Good soup.
So the idea that they would disband was always a little tough.
So what changes?
What changed was Tuesday.
But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides. You had people in that group.
For many of them, this was the end of the line.
What kind of political pressures were these CEOs facing? And do you think, and you've been in touch with a bunch of them, do you think that the decision to quit this board or to force its disbanding came down to morals, customers, or bottom line? You know, just basically profits of their business.
To some degree, all of the above. But in this instance, I think the moral issue was a bigger one.
So you're saying these were executives who were genuinely offended.
Genuinely offended. And by the way, the greatest leader on this was Ken Frazier of Merck. Because think about what was at stake for him. The largest buyer of drugs in this country is the U.S. government. That is his biggest customer. So if you actually truly fear retribution of some sort to your bottom line, that was the person.
So it's Wednesday morning. How does this go down from your perspective?
My understanding of it is that there's a call set. Virtually all, if not all, of the members of this council get on the call. And there is a real discussion about what the president has said, what it means to their companies, where they stand. Can they disband this and still have a relationship with the White House, with Washington? What's the role of business? What's the role of business as a moral arbiter? And I think there are lots of different views. I think all of those questions were discussed in one way or another, but it turned very quickly into the practicality of how's this all going to work. And then my understanding is the call ends. Steve Schwarzman calls the White House, says, "We're going to disband this group." And then what does the president do? He puts out a tweet saying,
"The president of the United States has just tweeted, John, rather than putting pressure on the business people of the Manufacturing Council and Strategy and Policy Forum, I am ending both. Thank you all."
It's like, you can't break up with me. I'm breaking up with you.
Worse than that, he says that he and the group have agreed to disband.
And how significant an act is that?
It's a significant act optically, and it's a significant act personally when it comes to the president and the image he has tried to craft about himself.
Bringing manufacturing back to America creating high wage jobs was one of our campaign promises and themes.
Which is to say that he has tried to describe and portray himself as the business president, as the CEO president.
And I'm delivering on everything that we've said.
And he has put all of these people around him. I've heard some of these people even describe themselves as feeling like they are props in his theater.
Thank you, Mr. President. Greg Hayes from United Technologies, the parent company of Carrier Corporation.
Did you bring any more of those jobs back from Carrier? But one thing he did, you know, I said, you were given so much credit for that, and I heard 2 days ago that you're selling far more Carrier air conditioners than you thought, just as a patriotic move. People are buying Carrier because of what you did, bringing the jobs back to Indiana.
That's exactly right.
Right?
Yeah, great
so
success.
I said that. I thought that was going to happen. Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Does being on one of these councils mean that you're a supporter of the president?
Well, that was the fine line and needle that so many of these people were trying to thread. If you actually look, most of these people, or many of these people, were not supporters of his. What a lot of these people would say to themselves is, A, when the president calls, there's a duty to participate. Mm-hmm. B, from a business perspective, we think we have a view and we'd like a seat at the table on some of these big policy issues that might impact business. Healthcare impacts business. Taxes impact business. Immigration impacts business. Climate impacts business. So there are these big issues, and these CEOs want to be there and discuss them. And in fact, they had actually broken out into groups and done all sorts of work that they were trying to come back to advise the president on.
How angry are business leaders that the president asked them to put themselves and their reputations and their companies' identities kind of on the line for him in these councils, and then did something that they felt implicated. Go ahead.
Let me get you a text.
Please.
Because I think it speaks directly to this.
So you've gotten text from these folks.
For somebody who's been involved in all of this, he sent me this afternoon after, literally within about an hour after this council unraveled. And he was trying to explain to me what really pushed the group over the top. And part of it was the comments on Tuesday, but part of it was what he said in reaction to Walmart's CEO, Doug McMillon, who had issued a statement to his employees condemning not only the violence in Charlottesville, but the way the president had reacted.
Right, and the president went after Doug McMillon, the CEO of Walmart, and said...
So the head of Walmart, who I know, who's a very nice guy, was making a political statement.
So let me just read you a text. They thought that he was polite and respectful, he was not treated appropriately, and that was a wake-up call to some. He was polite in his criticism of the president, and the president called it political. That didn't go over well. The CEOs thought, well, you can't even give constructive criticism. This is what we signed up for. Don't underestimate how disappointed and angry the CEOs were with how Trump treated the Walmart CEO, who is very well liked by the group, not to mention the president's comments as a whole.
At this point, Andrew, what is the future of President Trump's relationship with American business leaders?
It's complicated. I think there will continue to be a relationship in large part because there's policy decisions that have to get made and will have big impacts on business. And if you read Ginni Rometty, who's the CEO of IBM's memo to her employees, she still said that the company was committed to working with the government. So they will do that. I just think they'll probably do it in private. They won't do it as part of these public councils. They will still lobby for the things that they care about. They just won't necessarily associate and attach themselves in the way they had through these councils.
Andrew, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
I'm Jonathan Swan. I'm a White House reporter for the New York Times. I have a pretty unsentimental view of what we do. Our job as reporters is to dig out information that powerful people don't want published, to take you into rooms that you would not otherwise have access to understand how some of the big decisions shaping our country are being made. And then, painstakingly, to go back and check with sources, check with public documents, make sure the information is correct. This is not something you can outsource to AI. There's no robot that can go and talk to someone who was in the Situation Room and find out what was really said. In order to get actually original information that's not public, that requires human sources, we actually need journalists to do that. So as you may have gathered from this long riff, I'm asking you to consider subscribing to the New York Times. Independent journalism is important, and without you, we simply can't do it.
Here's what else you need to know today. On Wednesday, President Trump's personal lawyer, John Dowd, forwarded an incendiary email to Washington lawyers and journalists. The email portrayed Confederate General Robert E. Lee in glowing terms, claimed that terrorists have infiltrated the FBI and Black Lives Matter, and said protesters should, quote, go back to the ghettos. In a brief phone call, Dowd told the Times, quote, people send me things. I forward them. Then he hung up. And
my child's famous Facebook post was, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. She paid attention. She made a lot of us pay attention.
Heather Heyer, the 32-year-old killed in Charlottesville last weekend by a suspected white nationalist, was remembered on Wednesday for a relentless passion for fighting injustice.
She was a firm believer in whatever she believed. And let's do that. Let's find that spark of conviction. Let's find in ourselves that action. Let's spread this. Let's have the uncomfortable dialogue. It ain't easy sitting down and saying, well, why are you upset?
Her mother, Susan Breaux, addressed the hundreds of mourners packed into a Charlottesville theater, many of them wearing purple, her favorite color.
And I think the reason that what happened to Heather has struck a chord is because we know that what she did is achievable. We don't all have to die. We don't all have to sacrifice our lives. They tried to kill my child to shut her up. Well, guess what? You just magnified her.
That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.